meeting to order. No, turn on the tape when I say that. Okay, I will bring to the today's the budget presentation from the Department of Administration, and we've already met talking about Drive to Excellence and so forth. So, anyway, Commissioner Badger.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I hope you don't get tired of me. Let me simply say that what I was planning on doing, if it's all right with the committee, was actually going through an overview of the department, because so much of what we do is not generally funded through this committee, but does have a tremendous fiscal impact on state government. So I'll move through that material quickly. If there's lack of interest, I did know you had some new members as well, and I was going to do a little bit of an orientation for the new members. About a year and a half ago, we really took a look at the Department of Administration and looked at whether its focus was really appropriate and whether we were really looking at the people we serve. And the people we serve, for the most part, as you know, are state agencies. Not entirely. We do provide services for the general public. But we reconfigured our mission statement at that time. So our mission is very simple, but I hope very self-explanatory. We help our customers succeed. We are the business service provider for state government. So what you have here is our little pocket summary of the Department of Administration, which includes a lot of the things we do, but also some of our goals and objectives. So basically, we provide services, obviously, products, tangible products like CLEAT, advice through management analysis, and expertise. We do hope that we're recognized for our innovation and efficiency. We try to be open to looking at what other states are doing. We benchmark a lot and make sure that we're using the very best and latest management practices. We obviously do have a significant role in reducing costs across government, not the least of which is in our sourcing area. And then finally, we really have a strong commitment to creating a work environment where people feel good about coming to work every day. So what do we do? This is a kind of a potpourri here over the next couple of slides of the things that we do, and I'll get into some of these in a little more depth. But we actually work with agencies of all kinds to determine their space needs, and to that end, we're currently managing about 800 facility leases of privately owned space throughout the state of Minnesota. Our purchasing organization buys $1.8 billion worth of goods and services on behalf of the state of Minnesota, as well as other states through our multi-state pharmaceutical purchasing business. We obviously collect and deliver the mail around the Capitol complex. We do issue licenses for archaeological work. We acquire and sell land and buildings, and we also work on the U.S. Census. We provide geographic and demographic information. We are the state's internal insurance company, recycling and marketing waste paper. We do help agencies save energy, and we have some tangible results to report on that. But we also maintain 4.3 million square feet of state buildings in and around the Capitol complex and in St. Paul. We do assist communities of persons with disabilities. We help citizens get government information and ensure open public access to information. And then we issue the permits for the protests at the Capitol. Again, just a select list of the kinds of things the Department of Administration does. Just to kind of quickly highlight some of what we've accomplished this last year. And we have in your packets, for those who have an interest in more reading, actually about a 3.5-page list of a number of the things, our tangible achievements that we've been able to accomplish this past year. But I just want to highlight just a few of them. Last year, the legislature authorized the construction of a BSL, Biosafety Lab, Level 3 Ag Laboratory within our new laboratory buildings here on the Capitol Complex. It is essential for our, potentially for an avian flu outbreak, but also for other forms of bioterrorism, that we have this kind of lab. In addition, the University of Minnesota had pending an enormous multi-million dollar grant, depending on our having this lab. The normal lead time for a BSL-3 ag lab in the United States so far is 6 to 9 months. In fact, the state of Iowa, I believe, has yet to to commission the one that they've built, or the USDA has built in Iowa. They're very, very difficult, complex constructions. Small, 400 square feet, but very, very highly intense in terms of their equipment, air handling, biosafety features. I mean, humans need to be very well protected in these labs. We accomplished the design, build, and completion of that lab in 3 months. It was a phenomenal accomplishment of partnership between our materials management division, who in every single case was ordering custom equipment, equipment that was not available on some supplier's regular factory line, and our state architect's office, who worked on the project management and design, as well as our plant management people. So obviously, and then working with the Department of Agriculture as a full partner. So we're really, really proud of that. VSL 3 Ag Lab. The University of Minnesota has since received a $34 million grant because we have this lab in place and certified. We have, I think, had great success with lease negotiations this past year. We do try to get the best deal for the state in the leases. We have had great success, for example, in renegotiating the lease for the Department of Human Services over at the Lafayette street area. We had wonderful success in finding space for the Department of Commerce Weights and Measures Division. They have an off-site location which actually has calibrated scales, rather large calibrated scales, for determining their calibration weights. The current landlord where they were occupied said that they did not any longer wish to entertain the Department of Commerce, and we had to find new space. So we had to work with a prospective landlord that was willing to build out a unique facility to our specifications, and we have now done so. And then obviously I think this committee, many of you are aware of the fact that we are moving the Office of Administrative Hearings from very expensive space in downtown Minneapolis to reclaimed space in the Stassen Building over on Robert Street.
I can ask a couple of questions about these buildings. One, we had a report a long time ago, and I thought that the least economical thing that the state could ever do was rent buildings where the with a build-to-rent component in doing it. That doesn't. What makes me think that's not what you did in Commerce?
Madam Chair and members, this is such an incredibly unique facility that has very specific kinds of requirements. Now, I really don't want to provide the detail in the transaction, so with respect to that one, I probably should get back to you on what were the business reasons why we did lease that premises.
For some reason, why do I think that Commerce, as opposed to the Ag Lab, is just a standard business building? And why am I having trouble finding out why it has unique requirements?
Madam Chair and members, it is because of the scales. It has to have, first of all, installed a seismic plate that will withstand vibration from the Earth's surface so that they can do their calibrations on all of the equipment that they use as they go out and calibrate gas pumps and so forth and so on. So the seismic plate was a big piece, as well as the scales themselves.
Okay.
I
understand. Then the next thing is, wasn't part of the discussion that we had is that the laboratories of health and agriculture were going to somehow be combined or somehow be... So I understand that the biosafety 3 level is a different one, but, you know, was that done in the new building?
Madam Chair and members, absolutely. It had always been envisioned to be built in a corner of that building, but there was insufficient funding in the first go-around for that. However, with the rise of the need, as well as the U of M's compelling need and the urgency of that, it was built in the building. The ag requirements are somewhat unique. They're dealing with different kinds of elements and evil things in the agriculture. So it has different filtering systems, for example. It is unique to the agricultural use, but in the building for sure, and shares the infrastructure. In addition, another accomplishment...
I guess at some point I'd like some further information on the lab systems within those two departments and, you know, how they were facilitated in terms of the building and the experiment. And for members, you could tell them where the building is?
Yes. Madam Chair, the Ag Lab, Health Ag Lab, is at the corner of Robert Street and... What is that street that faces I-94? The surface road for I-94. And it was specially built as a combined agriculture and health laboratory. The common areas are shared. The office areas are shared. In fact, there's a common corridor going down the middle of the building with the ag-specific equipment on one side and the health-specific equipment on the other. You know, health has some unique prenatal screening kinds of testing and so forth. So they do have unique functions. However, their intake area is shared. So all specimens come in through a single intake area. The reception area is shared. And as I mentioned earlier, all of the common spaces are shared, mail room, break rooms, and it's worked really, really well.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, Madam Chair and members, the next item is actually our energy savings. In December of last year, that is 2005, the governor issued an executive order with a number of energy-saving requirements in it, but the one that affected us was the directive that we attempt to save 10% of energy usage in state buildings in the next calendar year. Obviously, we don't have the full data for the full calendar year yet. It takes us a while after the close of the calendar year to get all our utility bills and reconcile them and so forth, but for the first three quarters of last year, we were able to save 7% in consumption. That's actually neutralized for the effect of climate or weather, at 7% less energy usage simply by paying attention, turning down thermostats, making employees a little more uncomfortable, but also looking at some recommissioning, having seminars with the building engineers, telling them how they might better tune up their equipment, changing filters. So simply paying attention to it, we were able to save 7%. That translates, by the way, to $320,000 worth of natural gas.
And just if I can take this moment, just since we have a bunch of people here now. First of all, I guess we have the minutes before us. Representative Hilty moves adoption of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. The next point I'd like to make, point out to members, is that you have assembled before you your budget books, and we prefer that you leave them with the materials. We've noticed everyone was sitting in the same place, pretty much, even though we didn't assign seats. So we'll probably just get that when we're using them, we'll get them put out at those places and try and have pages or staff take a note of where people are sitting and get them there. And we'll have to particularly commend staff for not ordering new books but going down to the supply room and getting the recycled books. And that's why the different colors don't mean anything. It's not a status or anything like that. It's just showing our commitment to saving resources too.
Blue is cool, though.
Doing that. Yeah. Yeah. But white is pure. So. Okay. Okay,
Madam Chair.
Representative Horton.
I have a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if there was any way we could take a look at the energy bills for the state office building. If they come, the electric and gas bills, if they come on a monthly basis, so that if we could get members engaged and our staff engaged in this effort to save energy, if we could see whether it's working or not.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Portman, I wish that were the case. As you may know, the Capitol Complex is on district energy and district cooling, which does not meter to the building. Okay. So we have the usage coming into the Capitol Complex, but not by building. However, we'd be happy to help you with educational materials, posters. We have a website that gives employees tips on how they can save money. We did, I have to say, restrict the use of electric heaters and fans and small refrigerators and so forth because they tend to be energy hogs. And so through those kinds of control mechanisms, we were able to achieve just through those mechanisms, 7%, which I think is pretty remarkable.
But we certainly don't want to take away the minority leader's freedom, freezer with his supply of Schwann's ice cream.
No, but I think we could show how much more frugal we are than the Senate. Apparently we don't have that data.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. All right, the next item, Madam Chair, is the fact it's just one other facilities project that I'd like to highlight. We learned that the Department of Employee Relations had signed an agreement with Minute Clinic, the local firm that supplies kind of on-site health care, and that's available to state employees as well as members of the public in the Centennial Office Building. But it was an incredibly fast-track construction project, which we were able to complete on time. In the purchasing and procurement area, just a couple
of... How has the use of that been? And do people, and does that anyone in the CGIP plan, I guess, get to use that, and it goes through the same billing facility, whatever? How does it work, I guess?
Madam Chair, it is a DOER program, but as I understand it, any employee or any member of the public is free to use it because it is a commercial installation. I do understand it saves about, on average, $50 per visit estimated, but I think that's maybe a question you should ask DOER when
okay.
they're before you.
Okay.
In the procurement area, as you all may know, we've talked about in Drive to Excellence our increased focus on negotiating contracts. It was not previously widely known, in fact, that we could negotiate contracts once a vendor had been selected. And thus far to date, we've been tracking since that program started about a little over a year ago, we've been saving a total of 17% from the bid price to the final contract price simply by looking at terms and conditions, sharpening up the deliverables, and getting a clearer understanding of what was going to be delivered under the contract. Sometimes, actually, you achieve the negotiation reduction simply by asking for it. We also are the first state in the nation to have installed software that actually tells us what we buy. Through the current MAP system, which, as you all know, is quite old technology, we actually cannot tell how many agencies bought chairs, for instance, because we don't code the data that way. The MAP system is very disaggregated and has chairs may be listed, for example, 100 different ways in different charts of accounts. But we install this software, which overlays MAPs and our payment software, and actually can sift through, and it's actually an artificial intelligence system that takes the data and mines it, and now we know for the first time what agencies are buying, how much they're spending on office supplies or cars or equipment or professional technical contracts that wouldn't otherwise be reported through any other kind of report. We can actually tell it through the financial system. That helps us in a couple of ways. It helps us go to vendors and say, look how much state government buys in your particular category. Again, just use the one I'm using, chairs. Do you know that we actually bought last year 3,500 chairs? If we were able to offer you most of that volume, could you not reduce your prices? And in fact, they have. So now we know we can go to the vendors through strategic sourcing methods and let them know what the total available market is for them in state government. And then secondly, quite frankly, we use it to track agencies, I hate to call it, but renegade spending, in terms of if they are buying things that are not on the state standard. We're not in the policing function, but we do inform the agencies, particularly the commissioners. Are you aware, for example, that you could have saved $30,000 had you purchased your chairs off the state contract? And oftentimes that's enough for the commissioner to be aware of that for the practice to change. So, and then finally, as you all know, we have a very... Yes,
ma'am. Madam Chair, Commissioner, talk to the committee, if you would, and to me in specific, about the reverse auction process, which we instituted maybe 3 years ago. Is it working in relationship to the goods and services? Does it work for some goods, not for some services? How much of the 17% savings you identify here is due to the reverse auction process where we actually get bids and see bids going down? Tell me a little bit from your perspective about reverse auction.
And Chair and Representative Stigham, we did institute reverse auctions a couple of years ago with legislative authority. We have achieved over $5 million in savings through the use of reverse auctions, and for committee members not familiar with it, how it works is it's a little bit like eBay in reverse. You receive
$5 million total or $5 million a year?
$5 million total. 5.56 in that range. You receive the paper bids, and you've notified the vendors in advance that you are going to potentially subject their bids to a reverse auction. You open the bidding at the people's paper bids, and then you keep the bids open for increments, usually of 3 minutes, and allow people to underbid their competitor until nobody offers a lower bid. And so it has worked. I would have to, I'll just be honest with you, I think it worked well for a number of commodities at the outset. We had tremendous savings on white paper, for example, other kinds of office supplies. It does not work that well for some commodities. And what we have found, you know, as you may remember, we borrowed the practice from the private sector, and we've been dealing with some of those same private sector firms to learn what's new and what other techniques should we be looking at. They, too, find that it has diminishing returns, especially if you're doing strategic sourcing in those same commodities. And we have been doing strategic sourcing in many of those same commodities. So it's definitely reached a point where we're not seeing accelerated savings from that. It was useful. I mean, the $5 million was certainly welcome. But it is not a tool that we're making wide use of.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, we're not making wider use of it because you don't think the savings are there in the future because of the potential diminishing returns. You know, three and a half years ago, I think both Governor Plenty and I at different times visited the Rio First auction taking place in Target Corporation. And I think that's why we brought it forward with recommendations to the legislature, and it did pass. I have not heard that in the private sector the diminishing return issue. I have not heard that. Maybe my ears haven't been open enough. Maybe I haven't been asking the right people. But would there be any internal reasons here in the state government for there being diminishing returns that I may or may not be aware of in the private sector?
Madam Chair and Representative Swigand, absolutely not. We put all the attention on it. We do look for every single opportunity to use reverse auction. We do continue to use it. But where, in fact, your bids are extraordinarily close, where you've already achieved very low pricing, as we have in many commodities through strategic sourcing, and quite frankly, it was Target with whom we conferred, and they, too, confessed that a lot of the initial savings were great, but they're finding that those savings are, in fact, diminishing.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And I'll finally just say that, as you all know, we are the state's disposer of surplus goods. We do that through our warehouse in Arden Hills. We have regular auctions. I believe some members of this committee visited the Arden Hills facility last year. And last year we had a record, $7.8 million record sales returned to state agencies. We did also this year experiment by using eBay. We ran simultaneous auctions on our online website as well as eBay. The results were just about the same. We didn't achieve remarkably better results through eBay, but it was an outlet that is viable for us should we choose to use it. Just a few more accomplishments. We've talked a lot, I think, about the Drive to Excellence, so I won't spend a lot more time on that, but we are proud of the strategic sourcing standards that we've put in place, and there are more to come. As I mentioned earlier, we are now focusing much more on our customers and what our agency customers need to get their jobs done. And so to that extent, we've really installed a program of customer focus. We're doing customer training with our employees. But if you go to our website, it's probably the most dramatic example of how we've changed how we look at things. It used to be you'd go to the Department of Administration website and it was all about our organization. So you would have to know, for example, that Fleet was in a particular org chart line to know if you wanted to ask a question or find out something about our fleet. Today we have totally turned that around and focused it toward your needs. So if you go to our front page, it simply says, if you are a state employee and you want to rent a car or you want to buy office supplies, so it's much more focused toward employees, toward state agencies, toward members of the public, so that it's easy to use and easy to find our services. We did also install something that we're calling the START website. I'm going to tell you a little bit later about a program we have called the System of Technology to Achieve Results. This is an assistive technology function, federally funded, but the website is up and running where people with disabilities can exchange their assistive technologies. For example, their walkers, their wheelchairs, their braille readers. And it's much like eBay, but it's available to citizens should they have an excess piece of assistive technology that they want to dispose of or if they want to find one that's more economical. We Council on the Developmentally Disabled received a national award for their digital imaging program. We had 65% increase in our E85 fuel use. You may have been familiar with the fact that the state archaeologist resides in our department and had some tensions with the American Indian community around archaeological matters. And over this past year, facilitated in part by our new state archaeologist, Scott Amphinson, and by former Representative Rhodes, we had a series of workshops, one of which was just about a year ago, cooperative stewardship workshop, where we reached, I think, an accord, some agreements around respecting the rights of the American Indians as well as respecting what needs to happen archaeologically. That relationship has dramatically improved, and we're working very closely together today with the American Indian community. We deliver mail, but we also prepare mail for mailing. So we will do addressing services, sorting services. For example, the tax refund checks will all go through our department, and we will save 5 to 8 cents per mailing by simply sorting them. And this last year, we saved $853,000 for the state agencies that used us. They're not required to use us, but those that did, for their bulk mailings. And then finally, as the state's risk manager, we have our own insurance pool for auto, for general liability, for casualty and property, and for other miscellaneous kinds of insurance. We did achieve a dividend of over $1 million returned to the state agencies that participate in that pool this last year. Our experience was $1 million better than had been actuarially predicted.
That is a documented savings for the bulk mailing. Is there any reason why we shouldn't require all agencies that are at least to use you to do it? And is there any analysis, oversight analysis, that can be done to look at the costs in cases where people didn't did it on their own?
Madam Chair, we don't know necessarily who didn't use our services, but we certainly know who did.
Okay.
Okay, now...
How do you know that was the saving then? How do you know that amount you gave us was the saving?
We do a calculation of what it would have... We're very, very closely tied into the Postal Service and understand the rate structure quite well. And so we do an analysis for every bulk mailing as what it would have cost had the bundling, had the sorting, had the zip code electronic character reader not been employed. And that's the delta between what we, in fact, were able to achieve, what we paid to have the stuff mailed versus what it would have had none of that occurred.
Madam Chair, if I could, Commissioner, those savings, whether it be postage or whether it be the risk fund or whatever program, they're direct savings by the different agency or departments themselves, so they share in the gain. So there's an incentive there. Is there, Commissioner, to make sure that the agencies do use those services?
Madam Chair and Representative Spigum, absolutely. They attain this entire gain. We receive no portion of it in that sense. And we do a lot of marketing. This is an area where, actually, in my reviews with this operation, I always challenge them for what recent marketing they've done to sell these services to state agencies.
Madam Chair, to take off on what you were saying, why should any marketing have to be done at all, Commissioner? Just tell me this stupid question. State government, executive branch, all responsible to the governor or to the legislature, citizens, whoever you want to say. Why is it not just as easy as saying every agency, every department, save this money, go through the department administration, you'll have a cost savings, there'll be a share of the gain, there'll be... why should it take any marketing? Why not send a directive from the chief of staff and say, do it, and including the legislature? I'm assuming that we should probably use your services, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Spigum, I hope that you do.
You were in charge all these years. I just sitting in the seat for the first time.
First time,
Madam Chair? In a long time.
You sat in that seat 62? No.
Madam Chair and Representative.
That was 26 years.
This is one of those activities, Madam Chair and Representative Spigum, that we have We operate as an enterprise. We do that with many of our operations in the Department of Administration. We're a state agency, is not compelled. We hope we're the provider of choice, but we are not the only provider. The same is true in our management consulting area, for example, although our rates are...
Madam Chair, and sorry for the belaboring this. Why would an agency or department choose not to use you? Let me approach it from the other end.
Madam Chair and Representative Swigham, I can only think of one example where I believe I know the facts, and that is that the Department of Motor Vehicles, where they have chosen to use an outside vendor for their mailing of the tabs because they insert advertising material in those, and there's a kind of a revenue sharing or some sort of money coming back to the department as a result of that transaction. And they actually... I think they're quite proud of the savings that they've achieved through that. So there can be good business reasons why an agency would not want to use our services.
Good reason.
So now we're starting to get a little bit into the budget. This is sort of the introduction to the budget. And this first chart just simply talks about when we went about our budgeting in the Department of Administration, what were our priorities? And you all know that looking at the statutes, we have some things we have to do. We are mandated to do them. And so we know, first of all, the first thing we fund are all of those activities where we've been told by the legislature they must be done. Then we also have legislative mandates, which may be just short of 16C, for example, but they are nonetheless mandates. And then, of course, we have governor's direction. And then, as you know, we are the home for the Drive to Excellence, so any of our projects that will support our movement toward thinking about state government as an enterprise was our third priority. And then fourth, of course, we don't do much, but we do provide some citizen value. So if the activity didn't meet those four criteria, it didn't make it into our budget. And so basically everything you will see in our budget meets one of those criteria. And then we did have two capital bonding requests, and both of those are, we believe, emergencies, and they are intended to preserve state assets. So those are our budget guidelines. Just a little bit of history. I'm not going to dwell on this for very long, but over the course of the last few years, the Department of Administration has, just like lots and lots of other state agencies, had a significant reduction in its general fund appropriations. Now, also during the same time, we've had some operations which were terminated, and many of which were transferred to other divisions. So, for example, all of the technology stuff went to the new agency, Office of Enterprise Technology. All the building codes was transferred to Department of Labor and Industry. We have taken all of that out of this analysis so that this is an apples-to-apples comparison. The activities that are today in the Department of Administration that were there in the year 2001, you will see that our budgets have been reduced 29%. And I think I'd have to say without a significant decline in service quality or offering. That's a testimony, I believe, to our ability to get productivity in what we're doing, to look at new ways of doing things, to automating, and I think just plain good management. Now, this chart simply shows that the money coming before this committee, that is the general fund operating budget, is only 9% of our total. And that's the reason I'm going to dwell on some of these next subjects, because otherwise you won't really get visibility into them if we just look at our change requests. You can see that we have the vast majority, 74%, and this is looking, of course, at the last biennium, so this is more or less history. $187 or $188 million were enterprise funds, internal service funds, and I'll get into more detail about those. And then we have the special revenue, federal and other money, which is $22 million, and then our general fund grants and other, which include public broadcasting and the similar kinds of things, are 8%. For the next biennium, this is not significantly changed, so it just simply shows that here are the new percentages in dollars for the next biennium, as included in the governor's budget. But I just want to talk for a few minutes, especially for those of you that are new to this committee or to the Department of Administration, about how much of our budget works. 73% of our department budget is charged to other agencies or entities. And so it's actually funded in their budgets. So in their base budgets going before other committees are amounts that will pay for their lease of space or for their use of fleet cars. And then we establish rates for all of those services annually with the approval of the Department of Finance, and those fees are then charged to the agencies on a pay-as-you-go basis. We have a lot of things that govern these rates and what goes into them and what's allowable. We have federal oversight of anything that's using federal funds. We do have a business plan. Every single one of these businesses has an annual written business plan predicting its volumes, its service offerings, its productivity improvements, its customer base, any marketing efforts or expansion of what they're doing. And that leads then to a rate that is set for charging to state agencies. So here are the enterprise funds. We have, I believe, 9 of them. And I think we probably should start with the biggest one, which, of course, is the plant management leases. These are state-owned buildings managed by the Department of Administration Plant Management Division. When I say manage, I mean that we maintain them, we clean them, we pay for the heat, light, and utilities. We do repairs. We have emergencies that we fix. All of the costs of occupancy of all of those buildings are then spread across all of the buildings according to their cost to the customers, to the people who are occupying those buildings. We have a specific rate set for every building, and we work with the agency so that for this next biennium, for example, they have established those lease rates as part of their own base budgets. We do recoup all of the costs of operating those buildings as well as recoup the cost of bond debt service. So we're paying back the mortgage as well as paying for the operating costs through these leases. Travel management is our fleet, run by our travel management division. It is the set of cars that you see driving down the road that have the State of Minnesota logo on the side. They are the long-term agency rentals. We do no longer offer a short-term daily rental to state agencies through the plant manage or travel management division. That's contracted out to enterprise. But we do have a number of cars that state agencies, health department, for example, all of their agents traveling out to the counties will use one of these cars. Then the next one, as I mentioned, is risk management, the state self-insurance program, and I'm going to get into that a little bit more. We do have cooperative purchasing, which you'll see is about $12.5 million. We buy things for local governments and, in fact, for other states. A big part of that, as I mentioned earlier, are the fees that we charge other states for doing pharmaceutical purchasing. We are very proud to be the home of the states of the multi-state pharmaceutical purchasing program. 44 states participate in this program. And we buy bulk goods, bulk drugs for them and get highly leveraged prices because we're buying in volume. And then in addition, as I said, we charge a subscription to local governments to participate in the state contracts. Mentioned Central Mail. That's the amounts that are achieved through its enterprise business, not through its general fund. Office Supply Connection sells office supplies to state agencies. We now have an online catalog where those office supplies are available. Surplus Property I talked about. Minnesota's Bookstore over on Olive Grove, just east of the state capitol complex, is a walk-in outlet as well as a warehouse for online purchasing of state publications. For example, the state building code updates, which was a big seller this year, was one of the items that they sell. They also are the home for the state register. But if you want a DNR map, if you want a DNR fishing guide, any of the publications put out by state agencies, you may go online to the Minnesota Bookstore website and give your credit card and buy whatever those publications may be. And then finally, management analysis. Management analysis is a state management consulting in-house service. Has a fine reputation for offering data analysis and studies, but also for facilitation, for strategic planning, for conflict resolution, for training. It does charge an hourly rate that I said is significantly lower than you might pay in the private sector for consulting services, and has, I think, a very good reputation. Does any number of legislative studies, has most recently facilitated the LCCMR formation and kickoff, and so forth.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Badger, I'd just like to quickly follow up on Representative Stigham's question. I assume that the customers in each of these funds are free to purchase in other places, and that it's sort of a competitive market in the sense that you have to look at what they're getting the private sector or could as an alternative and have to be competitive? Is that how you is that how this is done, or are there mandates that, as Representative Sigmund was mentioning?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, it's a mixed bag. Frankly, as I mentioned, the central mail services are voluntary. If I look down, surplus property is statutorily mandated. Minnesota's bookstore, we are not the only outlet for state publications. We hope we're the preferred outlet. Obviously, management analysis is competing with other providers. Plant management, you really don't have a choice. If you are occupying a building under the control of the Department of Administration, you will pay the lease rates for, but you can control the amount of space you occupy or how it's configured, and you can reduce your costs through that method. Risk management is partly voluntary, partly, for example, Minsky has chosen voluntarily to be a part of our risk management pool, and in fact, they're our biggest customer with respect to their fleet vehicles, for example. So it's a kind of a mixed bag where we have statutory mandates, obviously, that puts a little different complexion on them. But we believe we need to be competitive in all cases, and we believe that we need to offer a service that state agencies will need and want.
Madam Chair, a quick follow-up. Are there mandates in place now that, as you think of yourself as an enterprise, you think for the sake of competitiveness should be eliminated, or are you pretty happy with the situation as it stands?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know that I have an opinion on that. Our belief around Drive to Excellence has been if you build it, they will come. And we believe we have such a compelling product with what we're doing in our enterprise approach to IT, to a number of other services, that state agencies can readily be sold on the benefits to them. We've chosen in Drive to Excellence, for the most part, not to make the services mandatory. Office supplies is one exception. We do mandate the use of the office supply connection for the purchase of office supplies because we have to get the volume there to get the price discounts. Again, I can't think of any particular service offering that we would want to mandate to get better leverage at this point, but I'll think about it.
Thank you.
At this point, I'm going to go through very quickly, Madam Chair, our divisions. We have a number. So these are a little bit different than the budget categories that you've just looked at. These are our operating divisions. We are the home of the Minnesota State Architects. This is a team of about 20 people, project managers for the most part, who are internal project manager support for many of the major bonding projects that are approved by the legislature. Not all, but many of them. And so what we do is that from, again, 20-plus state agencies, we do the construction management and project management for these major projects. At the moment, we have more than 450 active projects. Many of them are very small repair and renovation projects, but some of them are quite big. Obviously, we did manage the construction of the new buildings on Robert Street to the east of the Capitol complex. One of the things we're doing a lot of is hazardous material surveys and abatement projects because that's where we've chosen to spend the money that the legislature has given us for asset preservation and CAPRA. So I've already mentioned the highlights here. The only other one I think I've mentioned too maybe is that the Veterans Service Building has been completely renovated over the past few years. And it was not a pleasant building to occupy. And I think what we've been able to achieve is an optimum utilization of space. There are a lot of people and a lot of organizations in that building. And I think the space planning effort was really remarkable. That building is now fully abated of asbestos, has been modernized, and I think it's a much more pleasant working environment for all of the veterans organizations in that building. I do invite you to visit it and invite you to use the fifth floor space, which is a wonderful space for a meeting. The only other thing is that we did have a really disastrous flood in the Centennial Office Building this last year. We had a main break on the bottom floor where many of the conference rooms were. We had a significant amount of water damage, and a significant amount of records were damaged and had to be freeze-dried and resurrected, so to speak. We had insurance for much of the loss, but not for all of the contents. But I think the remarkable thing here is the period of time within which we were able to recover. people were back in and using the building within days, within the next day, actually. Elevators, however, were badly damaged, and that was probably our long lead item in getting those elevators repaired and replaced. Plant management. I think I mentioned this earlier. This is the entity that actually manages the 21 buildings, the 23 monuments, the 30 parking facilities, and the 4.3 million square feet of space in the Capitol complex, plus the BCA building. It also provides energy management services for many other state buildings and operates the State Recycling Center. It is by far our largest organization in terms of people. All of the plant management employees working in all of the buildings are employees of this division.
Representative, just Madam Chair, just Commissioner, real quick question of clarification. I come from a city government, so when we do plant management, that's out of Public Works, and their equipment's really expensive. And I'm wondering if the equipment is used out of MnDOT's budget, or if maybe you could just clarify that for me.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative, we do not use MnDOT's equipment. We have our own dedicated equipment. I'd have to say that the equipment that we use for cleaning the sidewalks and so forth is probably not the most modern and up-to-date, but it satisfies. It's sufficient. We have, however, in the interest of efficiency, particularly with the new buildings, as we've been able to buy new equipment for those buildings, we've been buying extremely ergonomically correct and efficient new equipment, particularly in floor cleaning and vacuums and so forth. And so when we have the opportunity to make an investment in equipment, we're trying to buy the very best, both for our employees and for efficiency.
Real quick follow-up, Madam Chair. Do you have a list of maybe the equipment that you're going to be purchasing, whether it's, you know, a big truck or, I don't know, I just don't see a lot of the additions to what I would equate a public works type thing, and maybe that's good or bad. I guess I'm just curious as to where that would be if you're purchasing any major products or equipment.
Madam Chair, Representative, we'll have to get back to you if there's anything in the plan. Typically, of course, it would be just simply within the organization's business plan and included within its rate structure. I do know, for example, that we did buy a new truck for us, or a used truck, but a new truck for us for our surplus operations this last year, and it was, of course, then included in its cost structure. But we can find out if we're going to be buying anything major. I just mentioned a couple of other things. I mentioned the 7% reduction already, 1,945 tons of materials recycled. We have a goal, actually, of increasing that amount. We have a program we're about to roll out called 7% and 07. We want to increase the amount of our recycling around the Capitol complex by 7% this year. That will entail a publicity campaign and a number of other tools and techniques. And then finally, the legislature authorized energy forward pricing last year, and we have now engaged in energy forward pricing. It's too been a little bit of a mixed bag because of energy prices. We bought some forward pricing contracts for energy, and we actually won the bet in December, but in the months of January and so far in February, we're a little bit behind. But it is an attempt to actually level out price volatility in the utilities.
Thank you. I just want to follow up on the recycling issue that you mentioned, and thank the commissioner for helping me get a little bit more information about what happens to the materials that we send out of the state office building. And Representative Denny McNamara and I have been working together to make sure that we can make this building one of the most efficient in the Department of Administration in terms of sending out our recycling in the right way. And this is just a good moment to let you know that the recycling center that the Department of Administration runs over there gets $160 per ton of white paper that they sell for recycling, $23 per ton of mixed paper. So please sort your paper, and please put it in the right receptacles. It really does matter. What we do at these tables and in our offices has an impact on the numbers that we're going to be seeing from this department. So. And I just want to really thank the department for being so responsive to my concerns on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hortman. We actually appreciate your interest. It helps us as well. The next
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I just have a question on the energy forward pricing. Is that just for heating purposes, or is it? Are you talking gasoline for the state vehicle fleets, or
Madam Chair and Representative, it was limited to heating only. We do not have authority to buy gasoline forward price. In fact, no state is actually currently doing that.
Okay, so we couldn't go to the... Okay.
Madam Chair,
is there a certain reason why we can't? Or?
No, we've actually looked at it. Actually, the price volatility doesn't seem to be quite as great. You know, I could give you a much more thorough answer if I had the right person up here providing that answer. So if you'd like more information about why we have opted, we would need legislative authority to do so, first of all, because I believe the legislation last year is very specifically limited to our building heating oil in particular. But in any event, we opted, as have all other states who've looked at it, not to engage in it as not really having probably the payoff that we would hope.
If you could, I would be interested in that.
Okay. We have a real estate management department now, different than plant management or the state architect's office. This operation manages our non-state-owned space throughout the state of Minnesota. And as I mentioned earlier, it's 800 leases, 5.9 million square feet of space. It is the office space in particular. We do not manage the leases for DNR for a specific purpose of space, for example. We do offer space planning services, and this is optional again, but we found that we can actually work with agencies to reconfigure their space and in such a way that they really need less space and have saved a significant amount of money through our space planning services. And then this is the organization which handles land purchases and sales in state government. I think I've covered most of the highlights. We are also the data practices.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Badger, I'm curious about the enterprise system, the $6.75 million item there, and I'm wondering if you could give us a little more background about what that is, if you could.
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, we will do much more than that. This is, from my perspective, the number one budget funding priority for the Department of Administration. It is, as I think I mentioned in the Drive to Excellence presentation, the result of the work of a multi-agency team,
yes,
and the need to know what we own and its condition and to manage it better, to have a database of every single piece of property we own. And this system will facilitate that so that we can make better decisions about excess property, space utilization, prioritization of emergency projects, and so forth. But you will hear on Tuesday, when we are back before you again, a lot of information about that system. We'll show you some screenshots as to what the system will look like, and we'll tell you what it will do for us. So if I could defer your question, you're going to get a lot of information on it.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
This is the place. Is this the place where we had a $6.4 million goal of land sales in the 2005 bill to balance the budget?
Madam Chair, it is. This is the organization that was tasked with that task. Yes.
And the 120, the result as of 123 is about 1.5 million.
Madam Chair, that's correct. Those are sales that have in fact closed. We have others that are pending and may potentially close, but yes, that's the fact.
Okay. So, all right. Some discussion about that gap.
Yes.
Okay.
I was looking, in fact, for my sheet, and I could have given you more detail on it, but since I can't find it quickly, I'll come back to you with that detail.
Okay.
To alleviate suspense, the biggest single item is the Anoka, the remainder of the Anoka Regional Treatment Center, which may or may not close this year. It will help close that gap somewhat, significantly. But that transaction is entirely dependent upon the local government's approval of the developer's plans. So until those plans have been approved, we really can't close on that transaction. We hope that we can get it closed this year, but we're unsure.
Okay.
Data practices. We are the state's expert for data practices. We run a very small unit, 4.5 people, that provide information policy analysis. We do advisory opinions. We do about 60 a year. These are cases where either a local government or a citizen has a particular issue where they feel an open meeting law or data practices request has been treated inappropriately, and we issue decisions to that effect. They are don't have the force and effect of law, but they do have some influence. We do get 8,500 plus questions. We've tried to put a lot of this material online. We have a number of training materials. We do a lot of outreach with local governments and who may be new to the area of open meeting law or what is required in terms of data privacy and data public release of data. We did just do a lot of streamlining of the data practices for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And as I mentioned earlier, we're doing quite a bit of outreach.
Thank you, Commissioner. And when you say data privacy and consulting and advising, the Department of Public Safety comes to mind. Have you any conversations or some helpful suggestions when it comes to the driver's license and some of the issues surrounding that? I know DPS has their own version of what they're going to do, but it seems to me folks have a better track record maybe of identifying problems and offering solutions.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, I'm really not the right person to answer that question. I know that we do work with the Department of Public Safety regularly. In fact, our current director came from that department, so I think she knows really well what the issues are there, but she'd be really the person to answer your question as to their practices in particular.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, risk management, as I mentioned earlier, we provide insurance for over 100 state agencies and other entities. We insure $9.3 billion in property. We are self-insured to a certain extent, but we also employ a reinsurer for catastrophic risk. And we insure 14,350 vehicles, which, as I mentioned earlier, includes all of the state's fleet plus the fleet of Minsky. I mentioned earlier the dividend. We've given a dividend every year. We do this year have, I think, a quite effective fleet safety campaign attempting to reduce our losses in the fleet. We have a goal of reducing our per-claim cost by $1,000 this year because we've had some rather catastrophic claims in the last couple of years. Just driver awareness, cell phone use, buckle up, all kinds of programs that we're putting in place on better use of state vehicles to help prevent some of the accidents that are occurring. This division is perhaps inappropriately named for what it is today. It is basically our central mail, our office supply services, and the Minnesota bookstore. I think I've pretty much described those functions. I think I've actually described their savings. However, I haven't mentioned that we have 70,000 bookstore customers, many of whom are online consumers. Maybe I didn't mention, but they do also publish the State Register, which is primarily now an online publication as well, but it is the state's official publication of notices.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, thank you. And Commissioner, you'd mentioned the DNR maps. One of the new things in hunting and fishing is using GPS and GPS technology. And I was just thinking with the drive to excellence and some of that, is that a, as a hunter, if you can show me where all the walleye, or fishermen, where all the walleyes are on a GPS map, I'd be willing to give you $5 or $10 for that. Is that an emerging technology that you're looking to market? If you have all the maps, it'd make sense.
They could have put the DNR in there, you know, a lot of them the hatchery raids.
Where the fingerlings are going? Yes, Madam Chair, I highly agree.
Okay. Madam Chair and Representative Zellers, what you can do with GIS is just almost infinite, and it's exciting. And I might suggest that might be a question you'd ask our folks from the Land Management Information Center who will be here on Tuesday. Travel management, we talked about the fleet. I talked the other day about our Drive to Excellence fleet consolidation program. Just a couple of quick questions, quick points. We've had a 65% increase in E85 usage this year. We are obviously hoping that our gasoline and diesel fuel use will continue to decline. A fact that I always want to know is how many E85 cars do we have in the fleet, E85 capable, and that number is 1,738 statewide, which is 30% of the total state fleet. And as more and more fuel pumps become available, I'm sure there'll be more and more inclination to get those E85 vehicles.
Now, I'm sure, Christopher, I'm sure you know that most of us have been getting lots of communications from the people who are dependent on Linux, and I think you probably know it's an activity I've actually was involved in the
start of that in the state government, and I'm a strong supporter of it. So, and it just seems kind of strange because you know, the governor zeroed it out last year, and there was a lot of negotiation to put back in something, and now I gather it's zeroed out again. Well, what?
Madam Chair,
I mean, we're willing to wait.
Yes.
We're going to hear about it on Tuesday. We're willing to wait until then, but I'm sure, assuming that I'm not the only person getting all these communications, I'm sure there's a lot of interest in the committee on that.
Madam Chair, absolutely, and those people will, I believe, be here on Tuesday to present testimony to the committee about the interest statewide in retaining that function. But just as a point of clarification, the funding that was granted in the last biennium was one-time funding, and it was for the biennium only.
Okay, so I guess gather that's the problem.
That is the issue. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
State demographer, this is our state celebrity, as we call him. Tom Gillespie, I think, is known to everyone. He is a gem of state government. He, I think, knows more about the demographics of the state of Minnesota than any living human. He is, that function, however, is our liaison to the U.S. Census Bureau and does support both the decennial census, which is coming right up here in 2010, as well as annual population and estimates for a whole lot of entities for planning and for other purposes. Currently, we've been relying very heavily on their estimates of state government retirements, but obviously also high school graduation rates, K-12 education levels, and so forth are a big item for him. This is the Land Management Information Center. I think, again, we can defer the discussion of it, but it is...
Representative Biggins, please.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I just moved quickly off of the census thing. I had a couple questions. One, do we get federal dollars to for the purposes of completing the census?
Madam Chair, Representative, I was afraid you might ask me that. That, again, is a topic that we're going to cover on Tuesday.
Okay.
The money that we will be requesting here, however, as I understand it, is actually to publicize the census, and it's in a way to get out the vote,
yeah,
to make sure that every person is counted, when it will be very critical for us with redistricting coming up. And I understand they even go to Arizona and beat the bushes to find Minnesotans to register for the census. So we'll be discussing that in greater detail, and as they will be here on Tuesday, that's probably a good question to say for them.
This is one of the issues that I raised. I'm not sure if I raised it last year. Is I know several states have done a recalculation in the middle of the census, which deals with, you know, I wondered if there was any, and they've used it to get an increased share of federal aid, and they've also maybe done it to reallocate things in the state. In the state. Is that anything that you followed or looked at nationally?
Madam Chair, that's really a question for Mr.
Okay.
Gillespie.
Okay.
So
let's let the Commissioner finish her statement, and then we'll go to
back on Land Management Information Center,
okay.
So I was moving on to that, so if there are more questions on the demographers.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, do you know if there's any plans for increase in technology to maybe make the process more accurate, or is your office been discussing any additional technology that will be used for the census this year?
Madam Chair, I'm really sorry, but I'm sure Mr. Gillespie will be able to.
The issue that I know, and now I remember what it was, it actually was something that I learned to do as an undergraduate in the Zoological Society in counting bats in caves. And so when it became an issue in the census, I said, I've done that, actually. And the issue is that after you've done a census, then there's an issue of correcting the census by going out again, taking a small sample and going out again and recounting it. And then you get, you know, from the... I know how we did it with bats. We went out one year and banded a certain number of bats, so we had marks on them. And then when we came back the next year and collected and caught those bats, and then we knew how many of the new bats that we caught, we knew how many were banded and how many weren't banded. And so that kind of told us how many we had missed. And then you got the total population from that. So this is something which is done in terms of, and I wonder if that's anything that there's been a big argument on the federal level of people who want to do this to to do the argument of whether you could. So what you end up getting for your total population is you get a statistical. This correction gives you a statistical analysis. And the problem is that that's, I think, been forbidden by federal law. I'm not sure. And the question is whether the states can do it. Sorry, I'm very good at remembering these partial facts without getting the real story in play. But is that something that we want to, is that something that Mr. Gillespie will able to tell us about, the way a census can be corrected?
Madam Chair, I sure hope so. But I know that I cannot.
He probably never did that.
All right, let me move on here. We do have one budget item we want to get to today, and we do have some witnesses here, so I'm going to kind of clip through the rest of this rather quickly. We are the home for the Environmental Quality Board. This is the staff of the Environmental Quality Board. 6.8 people reside in the Department of Administration. Until just recently, I actually chaired the Environmental Quality Board, but Commissioner Hugesson has now been named as its chair. But we do provide the budget for that staff, and the staff then supports this board of multi-agency representation.
John Wells still on the staff of that?
I beg your pardon?
John Wells still on the staff of that?
Madam Chair, he is. The Office of State Archaeologist, I mentioned earlier, is a small two-person staff, including the official state archaeologist who was recently appointed this last year. I mentioned our liaison with tribal communities and the Cooperative Stewardship Workshop. We did institute a streamlined licensing process this past year. It used to be that people who were going to be seeking to do an archaeological study or dig would have to come and have each process or transaction or opportunity license, and now those who are engaged in that business receive an annual license, and it has been much streamlined for them. We did, during the year, review our license.
So, if I can ask, yes. Is the state archaeologist involved in this new activity up at Waka that we've been hearing about?
Madam Chair, I've asked myself the same question, but I haven't asked Scott Anfinson, which I should do.
Okay.
I'm assuming he is. There's little that happens in the state in the way of archaeology that he is not. He's a fascinating person and would be a great person for the committee to listen to, but I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I'll put out my concern about, you know, I've read the newspaper articles about it. As I understand it from the newspaper articles, this is supposedly possibly the oldest remains that are found anywhere in North America.
Yes.
So I don't like to be a media snob. But if that's so, why haven't we read about it in the New York Times or the Washington Post or Science or the American Scientist or any of those places that ought to be interested in that? It's true.
Madam Chair, I think it's too new. And they were concerned that they didn't have their findings well substantiated enough.
Okay. All right, Madam Chair, I have the State of the Star program, which is the System of Technology to Achieve Results. This is an entirely federally funded program, but it does give, we do give grants to organizations to either develop or promote assistive technology. And at the moment, we have a very robust loan program where we've obtained a number of very cutting-edge new technology assistive devices, things that help kids play video games, for example, and we are now loaning those out to organizations and to individuals so that they can try them out and see if they are helpful. I already mentioned the fact that we have the website up and running.
Now, what's the, how does the Council on Disabilities relate to this?
Madam Chair, it is a separate independent council. It's just one of the many vehicles in the state of Minnesota that delivers services or oversees services to the disabled. As is this next one, I'm going to talk about the Developmental Disabilities Council. This is the home for the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities. It is, again, substantially federally funded, although there is a small general fund request in our base budget, which represents the state match, but that state match is leveraged many, many times over with federal funds. This program is maybe one of the best in my department in terms of its focus on the customer, its quality improvement, its deliverables. They train people. They have over 14,000 graduates in their Partners in Policymaking programs. This is where the disabled or families of disabled can learn self-assertiveness, can learn how to assert their rights in a politically correct way and get results. They do a lot of training and outreach. It is simply a great program, and they are now. By the way, if you're interested, there is a wonderful show, I'll call it Parallels in Time, on their website that documents the history of the treatment of the developmentally disabled in the United States. That is shocking, actually, in terms of its history, but is enlightening in terms of how we are now. At least we've moved somewhat from the dark ages in that area. But it's a wonderful, wonderful website. All right, finally, we have support services in the Department of Administration. I won't spend a lot of time here because this is the Commissioner's Office. This is our fiscal services, the people who pay the bills, as well as our HR department, the people who do our hiring and our benefits registration and so forth. It is also where the one person who supports the Drive to Excellence resides. We do have some change items in this area, but I want to talk about only one of them today if I could. Finally, materials management is our purchasing organization. It's 67 people. This is the group that buys $1.8 billion worth of goods and services. We also manage over 1,500 professional technical contracts. We review over 4,000 professional technical contracts for state agencies. It's where we do our surplus sales through both live and online auctions. It is the group that will be here before you Tuesday asking for funding for the disparity study so that we can continue our minority and disadvantaged business preference program. Management Analysis Division, I promise, is the last one. It is our management consulting division. I just want to mention the general fund appropriation here is very important. So although this is a relatively self-sustaining, charges other agencies for its services, we do get a general fund appropriation, which helps us do studies for the legislature, helps us do things that where we would be unable to charge, where we do work for small boards and commissions, for example. So we will be here to support that general fund appropriation when required. Okay. Now,
something commissioners probably don't want me to say, but I will tell members of this division that there are times when we have thought of things that we would like to have looked at, and we have put it in the appropriations bill from this. It's something that commissioner doesn't encourage.
Madam Chair, to the contrary, I think if we have legislative direction, that's what that money's for. So
I said that was a little. They're perfectly happy as long as we're maintaining the appropriation. They do like this, and they have done. And the other thing that we did discover is that when we sent them out to do a project once and they came back with the wrong answer, when we sent them out again to do it again, they came back with the right answer.
No comment, Madam Chair. I really would like to spend our remaining time talking about a very, very important change item. It's small, but I believe it's very important. And if Mary Ellison is here, I'd like to ask her to join me at the table. Mary is and introduce herself, but is Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Ellison. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. I'd like for Mary actually to give you a little bit of the background here, but I just want to emphasize that this has been a longstanding project of the Drive to Excellence. This multi-agency team that Mary led over the last year and a half or so came to a number of recommendations, and I'd like to just turn it over to her briefly to summarize those recommendations for you, which then gave rise to this budget request.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this. I agree with Commissioner Badgerow that this is a small but important change that is being requested. I was asked to chair a team for the Drive to Excellence that looked at grants management operations among state agencies. And although we all operated with the same set of statutes, when we looked at how state agencies operate their grants, there was a whole lot of discrepancy under the same set of statutes, which results in a lot of confusion and a lot of inefficiency within state government. And while we had this team in operation, it consisted of people from state agencies. It also consisted of people from representing the cities and the counties and the not-for-profits. And Marcia Abner is here today from the Council of Not-for-Profits, and she certainly could answer any questions you have as well. Parallel to that team meeting was a group called the Enterprise Grants Management Committee, and that group was really the worker bees of all of the state agencies that manage grants in the state of Minnesota. So what we did was came up with some recommendations of how we think grant operations could be streamlined and that we could approach this more from an enterprise viewpoint. The Drive to Excellence Committee did end up recommending the creation of a grants management office within state government. The proposal before you today is to make that office part of the Department of Administration. That recommendation was forwarded last year in the Department of Finance bill, state agency finance bill. However, it didn't pass, not because of controversy, but you know there were a lot. There were just different bills that were related to policy that just simply didn't pass. There wasn't much controversy, not many questions. It just didn't move forward. Then, of course, this past January, the Office of Legislative Auditor completed a study on the management of grants to not-for-profits by state government and came up with very similar recommendations, and that is the Legislative Auditor recommended the creation of an office that would streamline and increase accountability while making a more of an enterprise-wide approach to the management of grants in state government. So we have two efforts coming forward with basically the same recommendation. That is the Drive to Excellence Committee and also the Legislative Auditor looking at this and saying, you know, we manage over $1 billion worth of funds that go out to 1,900 different not-for-profit organizations. There's wide discrepancy in the way that state agencies handle grants, and we would be wise to create a small office that would streamline and make more efficient our management of grants. And so that's the proposal that you see in front of you today.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the, I mean, the funding seems like a pretty small amount compared to the overall scope of monies that you're dealing with. What is the process plan for implementation, and what, you know, how does the oversight, or if there is oversight, aspect of this work?
Madam Chair, Representative, the office really would be a coordinator and an implementer of policies and procedures that have already been developed by the Drive to Excellence Steering Committee and by the state agency representatives that are managing grants. What we did was used the Enterprise Grants Management Committee that I mentioned, which was made up of the worker bees, and then the steering committee, which was made up of the other people that I mentioned. We went through all of the different processes and procedures of managing a grant from the time the RFP is issued to close out and made recommendations of how to streamline those procedures. So that work has already been done. The issue is that because there has been such wide practice among state agencies, we need a couple of people to institutionalize those recommendations that we came up with among the state agencies. So we already have within the state agencies the people that go out and monitor grants and do that work, and that is fine, and we want that work to continue. But we need this smaller group to operationalize the recommendations that have been made. We also need a smaller group of people to look at what would be the most efficient and effective way to purchase or implement a web-based grants management system, which would greatly streamline how grants and the management of the grants interact with the accounting system and all of that. We have some agencies that have developed their own web-based grants management processes, public safety being one of them, but the most critical thing that needs to happen before you make that investment is to standardize your business practices. If you don't standardize your business practices, then you waste a lot of money on a web-based system that you could avoid if you had standardized business practices. So this is a very long answer to your question, I understand. But so we've done a whole lot of that work in terms of what the new business practices should be, and we've got people poised within the state agencies to implement that. But we need these two people to make sure the processes and procedures are implemented, that they're consistent among the agencies, and then to look at how we could use technology to make the office even more efficient. The other thing just that I would say, the other gap, is that we really need to develop a way to better communicate all of the different grant opportunities that are available in state government. And I know that sounds like an easy thing to do, but I've been involved in the grants business for about 15 years, and we have never been able to very successfully get together and just publicize all of the different grant opportunities available in one place where anybody who's looking for a grant could go and then find out how to apply for the grant, what the requirements are, and all of that. So that this group of people would also make help make that a reality as well.
Madam Chair, if I might just add just 2 points to that. I think the legislative auditor report pointed out the inconsistency in agency practices, and if we standardize them, I think we will ensure, for example, that there is competition where competition is appropriate. We will assure that there is a written grant contract as needed to clarify the roles and responsibilities. You know, we will, by putting discipline into the system, we will respond to many of the findings of the Office of the Legislative Auditor. The second thing I think is important, and maybe Ms. Abner could speak to that as well, but we need to make things simpler and more transparent for the nonprofit community. I mean, I just shudder to think if a nonprofit, especially a small nonprofit without many resources, were trying to navigate their way through the various grant processes in state government. This will make it a common process. They'll need to submit common kinds of forms, common applications. The requirements will be the same. So they don't have to have a, they can have a plain vanilla kind of grant application that will meet all needs.
I noticed that Ms. Abner is here. Did you want to make some comments on this?
Madam?
We're not cutting you off.
No, absolutely
okay.
Not.
Could I quickly ask a follow-up? I understand the discipline that you're talking about. How do you enforce the discipline? What's in place to, you know, as it were, over time, make sure that the cats don't wander off in different directions again?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, I think one of the reasons for putting it in the Department of Administration is that we're used to issuing and enforcing policy. We do it with any number of other areas, including professional technical contracts, which these are not the same. But I think, in addition, the drive to excellence does argue for an enterprise approach in everything we're doing, and we're finding that just buying into that enterprise approach, agencies are, if you build it, they will come. If they see that there are benefits for them to follow this common practice, they will do so.
Ms. Abner?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Abner. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. My comments will be brief. We were very pleased to be included in the deliberations over the grants management system development. This has been a really difficult area for nonprofits in Minnesota for a number of years. We have spoken with and worked with the legislative auditor for a number of years. And what's happened, I think, is that we really need to go back to that core standard of best practices. And so on behalf of nonprofits, I would just applaud the efforts of the BPE work and point out how important it is for especially small nonprofits, but all nonprofits, to have access to all the grants that are available, predictability in the system, a high level of transparency and accountability. And I think that we've learned a lot in the DTE process from the foundations that do this work so well. I think they've been good partners. I know they work with the legislative auditor. We really applaud the general direction of the auditor's report. But even more, I think that having worked with the DTE process, they're really ready to go. The details of best practices have been pretty well worked out. And if there is a central function that I think will support grants managers at the agency level, we'll see that level of consistency and we'll have one place to go so that we know what's available, what the process is, who's deciding, what's decided, and what's expected of nonprofits in their accountability and their best management practices internally. So we applaud this work and hope to be involved in the discussions as we deal with the details. Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one follow-up question. I believe I'm a co-author on a bill to establish a website with a sort of one-stop shop. Is that the bill, presumably, that would have put this into force?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, the website would be a second phase of the creation of this office and was not included in the governor's recommendation. But what is included is the development of the requirements for such a site. So I guess I'd have to say no. The legislation that would create this office, and there's some other enabling language necessary to define grants a little bit better in statute, and that's all part of a package that we're advancing. The website, we believe, is a little bit down the road. We need to get our kind of building blocks in place, and then we need... The website is not an insignificant investment either, and we want to be able to come back to the legislature with a good number in terms of what it would really cost to do that website appropriately.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I just might, I want to just give a preview of coming attractions, if I might. We do anticipate, I believe, testimony with respect, obviously, to the Land Management Information Center on Tuesday. We have been informed that several witnesses want to testify with respect to the targeted group study. I was just informed before the meeting that public broadcasting will be likely to have several witnesses present on Tuesday. And I believe those are the only ones that I'm currently aware of.
Are you sure that public broadcasting is here, or aren't they in the Heritage Committee now?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not quite sure because they were just here and asked when we were going to be presenting the items, and we weren't sure either. We'll sort that out.
I think they're not here.
Okay.
If they're not here, even though we love them, we don't want them here.
That's fine. Well, as you know, we don't take a stand really with respect to those. We're simply the grant administrator.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
That concludes what we were going to do for today, if that's all right.
Thank you. Okay, great. Thank you. Members, remember, please leave your books. If you want to take them, you're responsible for bringing them back, which you can. And I tend to like to leave the stuff that the committee gave, you know, which I've scrolled on and so forth, with my book in the area. We're going to put some folders, some of the ones that would have slot, you know, whatever you call it, a thing that you can put papers in. So, in your books, too. Okay.
Great.
Meeting adjourned.